Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
Whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy Radio Show. We are live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Hope you are having an amazing, fantabulous day whenever and however it is you are listening. Some quick plugs real quick. Get ready for the State of Pro Wrestling podcast coming up later on today. It's going to be an interesting show, so I hope you check it out. If you're looking for more content from us, of course, check out Take It Easy Podcast wherever it is that you get your podcast. You can find us Apple, Spotify, Google, wherever it is, as well as following us on Instagram, Take It Easy Podcast, Comical Sports Memes, and Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. There's more stuff that's going on, but I'm not going to waste your time plugging it. We are back. We are living our best lives. I hope you are doing unbelievably amazing here today. We got a fun show planned today. Maybe a little deeper into the serious stuff, but we've been gone for a week. There's not a lot of interesting sports. There's only so much I can talk about with Anthony Davis over the next 4 weeks, and there's only so much Brooklyn Nets coverage to talk about. The NFL is in pause and baseball doesn't start for another month. So we're just kind of chilling out right now, looking for stuff to cover. And we were gifted the story of the month yesterday gifted is not the great word to use for it, but we were given the story of the month yesterday with Tiger Woods. And I got to cover it just ever so slightly on the podcast this morning and just talking about, like, I got a little bit shook by all of this. The Tiger Woods stuff definitely got me a bit shook. I think it's because we talked about his documentary on the show, well, the radio show and as well as this podcast, or the podcast as well as the radio show. But it's super, super interesting to see it all play out in real time. And so for our opening topic today, and we'll talk probably about Jeff Bezos, we'll talk about the Seattle Mariners, and we'll talk about some other stuff in there. But for the opening topic, I just want to talk about Tiger Woods for a good bit here for our main story of the day, because it's really interesting to see it play out the way it did. And, you know, there's more up-to-date information now, what is now being dubbed as this is not 100% accurate. We don't know the exact information, but this is what is known as of the moment, that you were talking about a compound fracture in his right leg, which basically means that you have breaks in multiple places with bones protruding. And then in his other leg, you have a shattered ankle and you have, I believe, a fracture that is basically like breaking of the bone in more than two places in his left leg, which I'm guessing took the brunt of the accident. There's some conflicting information, which of course there's going to be conflicting information in a story like this, because when you have an accident like this and the sheriff kind of just dumps everything on you because no one had any inclinations this had happened. There was just a car accident. They responded to it. Originally, they had mentioned that they used something called the Jaws of Life, which I found Jaws of Life to be overwhelmingly comforting. If I were ever in a life-threatening situation, having the Jaws of Life in my repertoire would certainly make me excited. And it's really interesting how when it gets dumped on you, there's a rush to find information. And sometimes the information is not going to be the most accurate thing in the world. I do have to admit, though, in the grand scheme of things, people were very good about not crafting different stories or finding different information. Like, I remember with the Kobe Bryant stuff that there was a lot of crazy misinformation that was going around that at one point I think led to Rick Fox being dead, which is obviously horrifying. But I do have to say there wasn't a lot of that this time around with Tiger Woods. Now, whether or not that has to do with even the fact that Tiger Woods isn't as big of a celebrity as Kobe Bryant, or the fact that Tiger Woods lived through the incident, whatever it may be, it definitely creates this weird level of intrigue out of the whole situation for people. And people didn't have a lot of crazy stories, even though, as I'm now looking through what are the headlines just on my news feed, it has it had basically Tiger Woods, the story behind the injuries. It had Tiger Woods not being under the influence. It was a lot of Tiger Woods stuff. Tiger Woods' ex-mistress commenting on the situation. Like, we started doing some of the dirty stuff. People got tempted again to do some of the dirty stuff that they did Tiger dirty back in 2009. People were tempted to do it again, but it didn't quite get to that level. And I think a big part of that has to not do with the fact that we feel bad about it. I would like to state that first and foremost. It's not that we feel bad about the Tiger Woods situation from before. It's the fact that he's just not as big of a celebrity as he was back in 2009. Like, there was a time where he was like the most famous and then the most infamous person in America. Like, if you were crafting the perfect narrative for how the brand is supposed to look, that's what Tiger Woods was. Like, he was just the pinnacle of perfection. When you look at what the brand of Tiger Woods was through much of the 2000s, even all the way through his dad dying and ACL injuries and all of that stuff that just added to the legend, just a pinnacle of perfection was basically the image that was given off from the top on down. And so Tiger Woods obviously isn't as big of a celebrity as he once was. And I think that that's not really a shocking statement for most people to get behind, that he is not the same level of celebrity that he once was. But in the context of this, it was basically like this injury where, as the sheriff's department is reporting, that he was conscious and struggling to get out of his car when first responders arrived. They were able to get him free, bring him to the hospital, try and seal those wounds or protect those wounds from some sort of infection. He had trauma in the muscles and tissues, and, you know, it's going to be a long road back. This is what happens in these sort of situations. They talked about it with Alex Smith in that documentary, which basically Alex Smith was upgraded to basically like wartime injuries was what he was recovering from, and Tiger Woods is going to have the same thing. And, you know, I saw another headline that talked about Rory McIlroy just giving he was getting universal praise for talking about how Tiger Woods was basically like golf isn't on the spectrum of like what could or could not happen to Tiger Woods. And like, it's just the idea of, you know, how long before he walks again, how long before he's operating without crutches, how long until he can leave the hospital or whatever it might end up being. And, you know, sometimes perspective like that is good. I think saying the obvious thing and getting praise is always a little bit shallow and a little bit strange. And I kind of have to go against that on this one. Not against what Rory is saying, but against the idea of showering universal praise upon someone for saying the obvious thing, because of course, when you have a compound fracture in your leg, shatter your ankle, which is actually a medical term. He shattered his ankle and have compound fractures like that all of a sudden. Of course, like, the golf is on the back burner. Like, it's the obvious thing to say, but when he says it, he gets universal praise. That was just something that I started thinking about. But within the context of like what we know about Tiger, I think the part that shocked me the most, and I talked about this morning, was just the fact that It felt like the story was over. It felt like the Tiger Woods story was like the end of the book was written. And now we're like getting into the plot line of like a Shrek 2 or something. I only think of Shrek because Shrek literally was a book. Like the whole point of the story was like, if you've watched the movie, they take the book off the shelf. And at the end of the movie, they put the book back on the shelf after the happily ever after ending with, in the case of Tiger Woods hugging his son on the 18th green at the Masters in 2019 and having this greatest moment in the history of golf, and nobody can debate it. That felt like that was the end of the story. And Tiger Woods had, you know, battled addiction, battled injury. He had finally started to befriend a lot of the people on the tour, at least for the professional element of it. He was playing golf with his son. His son was posting photos at 12 years old, and Tiger training him the way his dad trained him, and just being a dad, but not the kind of dad that his dad was, but still some of those elements, because his son is obviously getting deep into golf like his dad did to him. But his dad basically crafted Tiger like a robot. And, you know, maybe Tiger Woods is the robot dad, like father, like son. He grew into his father's, well, he grew up to become his father. I think a lot of that was evident in the HBO Tiger documentary, is that Tiger did grow into his dad, and then he lost everything. He realized that golf isn't everything. And, you know, he started to just enjoy being there with that, with realizing that he probably wasn't going to win major tournaments ever again. Well, lo and behold, he did win a major tournament again. And the pandemic happened. And now here we are in this new place where, for a 46-year-old, this is going to take a lot just to get back to whatever physical capability. And as much as people have been mentioning recently the fact that he's done it before, he made it back. First of all, he's older. Second of all, he is coming off of those back and knee injuries. And thirdly, you're looking at like 4-year time frame for him to get back to winning level of golf. He'll be 50 at that point. So like maybe he'll be 49 or 48. Maybe it'll take till 2023. Whatever. Not really important right now. I genuinely don't care about that side of it. And I think I never really cared about that side of it, because again, I talked about it this morning. I don't remember the Tiger Woods who was the amazing figure, the cult figure. I think my first like introduction to anything that happened to Tiger Woods was just by watching South Park and seeing them make the jokes about sex addiction and Tiger Woods. Like that was the first introduction I had to anything other than, hey, he won this tournament in 2008 when I was a first grader. That was really cool. I got to watch that on the last day of school in first grade when he won the US Open in San Diego. Cool. Like, that's all I know about him. And so now that I know the context from the documentary, and now 2 weeks later, he's back in the headlines for like the Dory of, well, if we're really thinking about it, the biggest golf story of, or just the biggest sports story of the month. Because if you take the Super Bowl out of it, this is definitely the biggest sports story of the month. Like, even the Super Bowl wasn't very good. Anyway, so the point being, like, it's a huge story, and we were better about it this time. Now, I don't know if we were better about it because Tiger Woods is not who he was in 2009, where he's not just, like, transcended golf. He's transcended sport. Like, he's just this multi-million, near billion-dollar brand, and he's at a time the most famous and then the most hated, without question, the most hated person in America for reasons that were mostly construed in the narrative and mostly construed in the media because people like a scandal. The news ran with it the same way that they ran with Donald Trump in 2015 and 2016, is that you can run with stuff that sells, and people love this idea of not only a guy, well, in the case of Donald Trump, who says anything that he wants and does anything that he wants. In the case of Tiger Woods, same idea, guy who does anything he wants at the most bare level. And you can go through more examples of it. It's a big reason why we had that magical minutes of courtside Karen, and why she became famous recently, or why any fan, to be honest, in that context. I mentioned her because it's the most famous example, but you can go down the line of any fan where they have their moment in the spotlight because people are attached to the person who says and the person who does whatever they want. And when Tiger Woods has 15 women come forward saying that they had had relations with him and that he's going through these deep, dark demons, but it's funny for everyone else to absorb because it's talking about sex and people love talking about sex, all of a sudden that makes him the most hated person in America for reasons that people wanted to sell that narrative and drive home that narrative and suck every living breath out of Tiger Woods to serve their own interests in covering Tiger Woods. All of this is to say that this time around, this is not as fun as the last one, at least for people to cover. And Tiger Woods is just not celebrity anymore. Like, if Tiger Woods had another incident like that, it would be more than someone of Tiger Woods' fame, which is a really old golfer. But if he had some sort of scandal that existed, case in point, remember when he had the DUI back in 2017? For those who don't remember, Tiger Woods basically had a DUI. It was on a Sunday morning 4 years ago now. And there's the viral photo. If you Google Tiger Woods meme or Tiger Woods mugshot, you'll probably know what I'm talking about. But Tiger Woods basically had like a concoction of like five different drugs in his system when he was pulled over by the police and arrested for driving under the influence. And so the coverage of that was intense, not because of who Tiger Woods is, but because of who he was. And that combination of, at a time, people sucked everything they could out of that story back in 2009, 2010, for the fact that people just kept eating that up. They were eating up the idea of the guy who put off the image of perfection and high moral standards and dominance in his sport. Women adored him. Men wanted to be him. It was like, this guy is Mr. America, transcends race, transcends sport, transcends celebrity, all that stuff. And to have it all fall down, people just couldn't stop eating that. Now, part of that is an indictment of us. And part of it is someone getting involved and saying that, like, you know, this is a little too far. But once the media grabs a hold of something, it goes totally out of control. And we'll get to Kobe Bryant in a little bit when it comes to that. But I think people wanted to just suck a little bit more out of it back in 2017, because this was before he ended up winning the major. This was before the redemption story was complete. This is, you know, six years removed from the end of the crazy scandal. And mostly we just know Tiger Woods of, when will he return to golf? Will he ever be healthy again? Can, for people who do sports gasbaggery, will he win another major? That kind of thing. He had faded from the spotlight of celebrity. He was someone left in the 2000s. The 2000s was Tiger Woods' time to shine. Kind of like how, like, Tom Cruise still kind of exists now, but his time was like the 1990s or the 1980s, or like Brad Pitt has kind of been left in the 2010s, but he still is around and making some news nowadays. Or Derek Jeter or Alex Rodriguez. Alex Rodriguez is a good example. People like that, where they were left in the 2000s or left in another era, but they still exist in the mold of celebrity because of who they were. Not who they continue to be, but because of who they were. And I think people wanted to suck just a little bit left out of that Tiger Woods story. But this one felt different. And it felt different because everyone may be coming off of post-Kobe Bryant mindset, where Tiger Woods is now universally beloved again. Like, other than people who still hate Michael Vick, like, the same idea. Like, just, there were people who won't forgive him for their racially undertoned reasons. Like, there are people who will still be upset at Tiger Woods and all that jazz. It will never go away. And so you're left in this position where, like with Kobe Bryant last year, where everyone is looking around at their own vulnerabilities. And for this person who is now universally beloved, who went from being the king of the mountain to hated, the most hated person in America, like Kobe Bryant was for a short period of time, or at the very least the most hated athlete in America, back to universal praise by rehabbing his image and by winning a lot. That's another part of it. Winning cures all is unfortunately the truth of sports. It works in other industries because sports do reflect society, but sports are the only industry where you can have like clearly defined outcomes and winners. Like even when an actor or an actress wins like an Oscar after some sort of scandal, it cures some of it. But for the people who aren't super deep into it, it is not so much perfect in whatever image it might be. Like their image is not totally reconstructed, but for people who like know sports and know golf, Tiger Woods, universally beloved figure within sports. And so when this happens, the reaction is more stark because people are looking at the moralities. We've been through Kobe Bryant in the last year, which I think Tiger Woods, I don't even think would have hit as hard as, would he? I think Tiger Woods wouldn't have hit as hard as Kobe Bryant, even if he hadn't survived the car crash. But still, the elements are one and the same, is that people are looking at the moralities of the situation and realizing, oh, we're not ready for this. Like the story of the ending, and that's it. Like the book is written in stone, and I had already assumed the book was written in stone and probably don't think that much about Tiger Woods, just like I don't think very much about Kobe Bryant in January or December of 2019. Like I didn't think much of Kobe Bryant at all, but the idea of the book being final and not having him, you know, pop up every now and then in a new story, some sort of event or a Lakers title run or whatever it might be. You know, he had faded from the public spotlight. But people also forget that Kobe Bryant was the most hated person in America for a short period of time in 2003. Kobe Bryant was the most hated person in America, similar to Tiger Woods in 2010. This was just a product of being at the mountaintop when Kobe Bryant was one of the three most famous basketball players in the world, maybe the most famous. Him and Shaquille O'Neal, and having all of it go down because Kobe Bryant, if you read Jeff Perlman's book called Three Ring Circus, which we've reviewed on the podcast before, Kobe Bryant pretty much raped a woman in Eagle, Colorado. Like there is no like room for debate. Like all of the evidence is pretty clear. The reason Kobe Bryant didn't go to jail was because they settled outside of court. That's the only reason that Kobe Bryant did not go to jail. And so you're left to your devices to look around at this, and the rehab tour brings you back into this place where you don't have to reconsider that stuff. And I would like to reconsider that Kobe Bryant. I've done it actually in the past year. I did it. Gosh, I remember when Kobe Bryant first died and Gail King was talking about, this is a weird headline also, Gail King got into beef with Snoop Dogg because Snoop Dogg told her to go bleep herself after she wanted to have a conversation about Kobe in Eagle, Colorado. But it's like everyone in America had moved on from it. They were just like, he has paid his debt to society, even though he didn't pay his debt to society. He just went on a rehab tour of his image. And everyone was willing to forgive and forget. And the same thing happened with Tiger Woods. Now, to be fair, I think there's a lot of guilt involved in the Tiger Woods part because people destroyed that man. And a lot of it was unjustified. Like, it was clear that Tiger Woods was not some sexually pervasive liar. It's that Tiger Woods was using sex to cope with the massive amounts of pain that was going on in his life, physical pain and emotional pain that existed in his life because he was this golf robot that all of a sudden the golf was being taken away from him. And he had to go through surgeries and rehab and, you know, try and barely keep his back together and keep his knees together. Like he was this robot who was trained to be emotionless, but ultimately he's a human being. And so the physical and emotional pain was being masked through sex. and later on through physical, from painkillers and from opiates when he got caught with the DUI. And all of that brings it full circle because we destroyed this sick person who had been trained to be a golf robot. And he trafficked in some of that. I think a big part of why Tiger Woods is able to become the image that he was and make the money that he did was because he was trafficking in that. So he's not totally exonerated, but I think society as a whole is not exonerated either, especially the people who just destroyed him. And so as this time comes around, it's not that. At this point, it is almost parallel to what happened to Kobe Bryant, like literally parallel. You can look at those two and there are literally, you can see the parallels. You can see the direct parallels. You go from being king of the world. First of all, if you're Kobe Bryant and Tiger Woods, you are these machines. You are just machines crafted to be great at what you do. And for Kobe Bryant, for those who maybe didn't read Jeff Perlman's book or didn't listen to the Take It Easy podcast when we broke down Jeff Perlman's book, which I don't expect everyone to do that, of course. But Kobe Bryant was struggling with identity when the Eagle Colorado thing happened because he was a black kid, went to all white schools growing up, and grew up in Italy for 5 years, spoke Italian, and went to all white prep schools in Philadelphia. Like, similar to Tiger Woods, there's this battle with who you are racially in the context of America because you don't fit into any group. And that's a battle that Tiger Woods and Kobe Bryant had to go through. Add to the fact that they were these child prodigies at what they do. Kobe Bryant got into the NBA at 18. They talked about how Kobe Bryant he wouldn't talk to any of his teammates really ever. He wouldn't hang out with them. One time they're talking about when they went to the club, I believe it was John Sally who was telling this story, but he talked about they went to the club and they brought Kobe for once. And at 10:30, he was like, Hey Sal, I got to go. Like right as they'd only been there for like an hour and a half. He's like, I got to go to sleep. I got to work out at 5 a.m. And it was just basketball, basketball, basketball. This is what it took to be great. This is what it took to be Kobe Bryant. And that was the sacrifice he was willing to make. And they talked about how when he was 18, he would literally like just go to UCLA's campus and just sit in the library just to be around people his age. Like, he was lonely and in a world that was, you know, 20-something-year-old men, and this dude is, you know, a high schooler pulling up to this environment where, especially having Shaquille O'Neal as your teammate and team leader, like, it's a tough environment, man. And Kobe had to, you know, he eventually caught on, but then you see him in the Slam Magazine days, and he's, you know, the Allen Iverson is more of a cult figure than Kobe Bryant, but Kobe Bryant can never be Allen Iverson because Allen Iverson grew up in the projects of Virginia and Kobe Bryant and that Allen Iverson grew up in the projects of Virginia and Kobe Bryant grew up in Italy and Philadelphia and was the son of a former NBA player. Like, he was never going to be that. And so there's this battle with identity that was like painful for Kobe Bryant. And at the same time, just like Tiger Woods, was in Colorado because he had surgery, because he himself had the physical pain that led to the incident, or at least led him to be in a position where he raped a woman who was working at this Eagle Resort. And so the parallels are similar. You go from being the king of the mountain, the prodigy who wows everyone, to the most hated person in America. You rehab your image. You have the redemption tour. You're universally beloved. After all that you've been through, you have universal love, specifically within the industries, like especially with what's it called? Within sports, at the very least. Universal praise within the context of sports. And in the case of Kobe Bryant, it was 3.5 years after he retired that he died? No, let's see. So he retired in 2016. So almost 4 years after he retired, Kobe Bryant died. And almost two years after winning the Masters, completing his redemption tour, as basically like the retirement moment for Tiger Woods to like put a finish on his golfing story. 2 years later, he almost dies in a massive car crash. Parallels are strikingly similar. And for Tiger Woods, this is going to be a really, really interesting turnaround because he gets to live through it. He's going to get to live, and I think if he had died, you would have started to see the Kobe Bryant-esque outpouring, even though I don't think Tiger Woods made as much of an impact as Kobe Bryant, but I think that's just a byproduct of the sport that he played. But it was so close to just totally being over. And we would have had to really start considering the legacy of Tiger Woods more than the HBO documentary did on Tiger, which now I really want a Kobe Bryant-style documentary. Not one that talks about the greatness of Kobe Bryant, but the pain of being Kobe Bryant and how difficult life had to have been to be Kobe Bryant when you're 18 years old and thrust into a professional environment where you are isolated and lonely, but expected to just be this child prodigy who at 19 is playing in the All-Star game. It's really, really crazy to think about how all of that plays out. And unfortunately for a Kobe Bryant, or unfortunately for a Tiger Woods, to go through the lows of the lows to get back to the universal praise. And this time around, we started to see the universal praise around Tiger Woods. You didn't see anyone poo-pooing Tiger Woods for almost dying, because again, within the sports context, Tiger Woods is universally beloved. Whether he should or not is another question about why we treat sports the way they do and why we go through the rehab tours that we maybe don't have in other industries, where sports also allows it to the point, like we were talking about, Kobe Bryant and Tiger Woods are probably, and Alex Rodriguez, but Alex Rodriguez doesn't necessarily, well, Alex Rodriguez technically is in this camp too, but the idea of like being the most hated person, not just in sports, but in America, for a period of time, being the most hated person in America, period. Now, the Kobe Bryant incident happened to correlate with the Iraq War, and Tiger Woods kind of just had 3 months of just being left out to dry in a contentless time of early 2010. He got left out to dry a little bit more than Kobe Bryant, but there is no question that both of those guys were the most hated people in America. And I'm trying to think of other athletes that could qualify on this list, because the only other one I can think of is Alex Rodriguez when the whole biogenesis thing blew up in his face. Like, most hated person in America, period. Even though America didn't genuinely care about baseball that much, I think that Alex Rodriguez, for a short period of time, was the most hated person in America, which is really interesting to think about, because Alex Rodriguez, again, went from universal love to hatred to hated person in America to rehabbing his image to now just universally beloved. It's really weird how that cycle works. And I guess we could throw A-Rod in that camp of Kobe Bryant, Tiger Woods, Alex Rodriguez. Is there a football player that would qualify under that? I don't think there's a football player that makes it under that category, because Tom Brady through the cheating, I guess Tom Brady counts on that list too. The fake cheating, but the smearing of the image of Tom Brady. Tom Brady gets to be on that list. Because I think that this is the other thing I say. I think that Deflategate was one of the best things to ever happen to Tom Brady, even because he didn't do anything. I think Deflategate is one of the best things that ever happened to our buddy Tom Brady. But anyways, Tom Brady does get to be on that list, I realize. Tom Brady, Tiger Woods, Kobe Bryant, and Alex Rodriguez, I think, is the complete list. But yeah, it's really interesting. LeBron James did it within the context of sports, where you go from being the beloved figure to the most hated person in sports on the Miami Heat to just even more beloved when he goes back to Cleveland. So LeBron James is in that context too, but his is only within the context of sports, and Tom Brady is only within the context of sports, and Kobe Bryant and Tiger Woods transcended sports and their ideologies and their stories. And so it's really complex to think about that idea as Tiger Woods almost dies. And I don't think this story is going to go away anytime in the near future. Like it is pretty, pretty intense. Also, speaking of pretty intense, they have the video. TMZ Sports acquired the video of Tiger Woods' speeding from the hotel and crashing off to the side of the road where he went over the divider. And then apparently Tiger had narrowly avoided a crash just before then, and then everything went downhill from there. And he went over a divider, car spun out, and he fell down to where, you know, he was recovered and taken to the hospital. So, interesting story altogether. So, what I was originally going to come in here and talk about as the lead story was the Seattle Mariners. And this might take us all the way through the rest of the story, but the Seattle Mariners had an interesting thing happen to them on Monday where... and this story kind of like jumped out of nowhere and then faded to the background. But Kevin Mather was the CEO of the Seattle Mariners. And if you've heard the story so far, he gave a speech to a Rotary Club where, to name a few things, he insulted one of the former players of the team, insulted Japanese translators insulted the player, Hisashi Iwakuma, for not speaking good English. Insulted Japanese translators and saying that when we talk about not paying the translator, he started sounding good. Trashed one of the star pitchers on the team. Trashed the franchise's best player of the last decade, calling him overpaid. Trashed Julio Rodriguez, who's Dominican, for saying that he speaks bad English, even though he doesn't speak bad English. But he is also not a native Spanish, or he's a native Spanish speaker who learned English and can speak English pretty well. And so he trashed him. And there's an array of other things. He lied about Mitch Haniger, who's the right fielder for the Mariners, talked about manipulating service time with Jared Kelenic, which we knew they were doing, but just to hear it said out loud is a rarity. It's all very interesting. And so, those are just to name a few. There's more stuff in there. He had no choice but to resign. And not because of what he did specifically it was racist, but what he did specifically wasn't a fireable offense. It's just, you look at who he is with this on his reputation now. So now you add this to his reputation. Is that enough to keep him still qualified for the job? Because this is the thing, Kevin Mather also had multiple accusations of sexual harassment, which were settled out, and he was able to remain the CEO of the Seattle Mariners. This happened back in 2018. That was enough to keep him employed, because even if you add that situation into Kevin Mather being who Kevin Mather is, to be quite frank, which is a white dude with privilege who says some messed up stuff, because it's who he truly is on the inside, is a guy who is coming from privilege and looks down upon people who may not be of equal to him or views people as not human, as he did probably for Hisashi Iwakuma and Julio Rodriguez of Japanese and Dominican descent, and also apparently women as well. Because he had, again, settled out multiple sexual harassment claims while being the CEO of the Seattle Mariners, or at least working within the Mariners organization. So this leads to the story that's in here today, where he's resigned on Monday. But what we saw was basically, so take it from this context. If you factor that into his job qualifications, does he remain qualified for the job? And this is the mindset that the Mariners take because, again, the Mariners are about making money. Corporations are run like this, except for the Minnesota Timberwolves, which if you check out tomorrow's podcast on Take It Easy, we'll talk about the Timberwolves as well. But within the context of the corporation, especially in COVID, is worried about making money. And one thing that Kevin Mather was really good at was making the Mariners money, which is why he kept getting promoted even as all of these character issues arose. And this happens in baseball a lot because baseball, as we've talked about before, is experiencing a brain drain, is that people who are diverse and extremely qualified, well, they don't want to go work in baseball. They don't want to spend 10 years for the hope that maybe one day they'll end up making the top of a Major League Baseball organization. So baseball is becoming increasingly homogenized, and really smart candidates are starting to fade out of the sport. It's starting to look more like a hedge fund, and to be quite honest, a lot of these hedge fund people are now owning baseball teams. The last two baseball teams to switch ownership, the New York Mets and Steve Cohen and the San Diego Padres with Peter Seidler, both of them are hedge fund people. So and guess who's owning the Seattle Mariners? John Sherman, a hedge fund guy. So a lot of this is getting increasingly homogenized. Baseball is becoming increasingly whiter, male, and straight, to name the big three in terms of gender, race, and sexuality, which are the pressing issues in America at this point in terms of oppressed groups. And so you're looking at a situation where baseball has lots of people like this. How do we know this? Because in the last month, the Mets general manager was fired as a result of sexual harassment against a female reporter, which was leaked, or was not leaked. It was revealed in a story by ESPN and The Athletic. You have, of course, Mickey Callaway of the Angels, who had multiple accusations of sexual harassment going back to his time with the Mets, again, detailed in a report by The Athletic. He was, I don't believe he's been fired yet, but he's been placed on leave by the Anaheim Angels, but I assume he should be fired. Yeah, it doesn't look like he's been suspended, but he hasn't been reinstated or fired yet. Looks like he's still employed, but will probably, once he's been suspended, will be fired at some point. And then you also have this case with Kevin Mather. And so Kevin Mather resigned, which was before he could get fired. Basically, they fired him but gave him the option to resign as CEO of the Seattle Mariners. And this was the only thing that could happen because, again, if a corporation is run like a business, unless you're the Minnesota Timberwolves, which, again, we'll talk about on tomorrow's podcast, corporation is run like a business, does Kevin Mather no longer feel – is Kevin Mather no longer qualified to run the Seattle Mariners? The answer is yes. Very clearly, the answer is yes, that his qualifications and his baggage no longer make it such that the Seattle Mariners can employ him. Now, was that the case before Saturday? No, he was still qualified, even after he made the Rotary Club speech on February 5th, still qualified to run the Mariners. Only when the Seattle Times report on this is Kevin Mather no longer suited to run the Seattle Mariners, which is why journalism is super important, kids. This is why you need journalism and why we should probably be funding journalism in America, is reasons like what happened to Kevin Mather. Is that is super important to report on and get his character, not so that he can get fired, but just so you know that this is what's going on and that you can make decisions. For example, if Kevin Mather's sexual harassment complaints had been better reported, there's a chance Kevin Mather would have been fired back in 2018. It's entirely possible. This one, because it became a national story, all of a sudden, yeah, he's got no chance. But if this had remained a local Seattle story, I don't believe Kevin Mather loses his job. I was listening to a reporter for the Seattle Times talk about this on a podcast, And he was talking about how he didn't think Mather was going to get fired. He thought that Mather was going to keep his job because this is Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times, credit to him. He didn't think he was going to get fired. It was only when it became a national story that Kevin Mather was relieved of his duties. And this is what the importance of public shaming can do and what journalism can do. When journalists come out against you, all of a sudden, this is where you can have some real change, where Kevin Mather is no longer employed. Now, are they going to hire another Kevin Mather? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe the optics of it change. But I assume two hires from now, they'll probably hire another Kevin Mather, because this just seems to be the direction baseball is going. Not because the people running baseball are racist, or shall I say more racist than who's running the NBA or the NFL or the NHL. They're not more racist. It's just that that's who they're picking from. The candidates in baseball are becoming increasingly homogenized. It's harder to find well-qualified candidates of color, well-qualified women candidates. It's really, really difficult to find those people now who are qualified to get that hire, because people are just hiring more people who look like them to run their organizations. And it's more appealing because of the way baseball front offices are structured, by the fact that you have to begin as a scout. You have to work slowly but steadily on your way up to a sport that, again, has a lot of Latino representation or Latinx representation. I guess it's Latino because it's only men, but has good Latinx representation and has pretty good Asian American or Asian representation. Doesn't have great black representation. We talked about this before, and has an overwhelming white representation within the sport. And so more overwhelming and comparatively, like even more than the NBA or than the NFL. But it's also a sport that is majority white instead of the NBA and NFL, which are, I think, 70% black. Let's see, what is the number in baseball? Yeah, 57% of baseball players are white, 31% are Hispanic, 7% are black, and 2.9% are Asian or other. That doesn't really feel right. I feel like it should be more than that for the Asian number, but I guess that's it. But anyways, the huge, it's really dominant in the Hispanic and white community in terms of, you know, baseball, obviously. We kind of knew that just based on what we know about baseball. But again, 57% of baseball players are white. Anyways, so Mather is in this position of power in a sport that is predominantly white, employs mostly white people, and front office structures of organizations, of really corporations, are becoming increasingly homogenized. And like we talked about, it's very much a hedge fund atmosphere. A lot of highly skilled, qualified people from Ivy League schools and prep schools, even people who graduate from so a lot of people employed in front offices graduate from the Harvards and the Yales and the Browns and the Stanfords of the world. It's a lot of numbers involved. Baseball can become an economy, and it's a $1 billion corporation. So $1 billion corporations kind of want people from these industries. And the thing is, if you're a person of Asian descent, if you're a person of Latinx descent, or if you're of black descent and you graduate from Harvard, Yale, or a large school like this, well, every corporation in America is looking for Harvard, Yale, Ivy League educated black, Latinx, and Asian American people to fill their corporate ranks. So why would you want to go work in baseball? Like, even if you're going to enter sports, you'd probably want to go the NFL or the MLB route first, even if baseball does have more money involved, only by like small margins. But why would you want to go work in baseball when, you know, the sport itself is increasingly homogenized? And so, and the process itself to get to the top is such as it is. And so Mather is just a byproduct of everything we're seeing in the sport now. Now, will we see more Hispanic people filling the ranks? And or more Latinx, not Hispanic, Latinx people filling the ranks of Major League Baseball organizations? I think in the coming years, yes. I like to think that in the coming years, yes, that would be the case. But we see what's going on in the NFL with the black representation in front offices and head coaching roles and assistant coaches, that I think a lot of it comes down to who the people running the organizations want to hire. And they want to hire people who look, think, and act similarly to the way they do. And so when we're looking at someone like, per se, a Hisasi Iwakuma, or we're looking at someone who, you know, maybe was a former baseball player of Latinx descent, and they are entering the MLB front office ranks, or they're entering the coaching ranks, or whatever it might be, are they going to get the opportunities to be hired? Your guess is as good as mine, but I feel like if you flood the talent pool with people of those sorts, i.e. non-white or non-male or non-straight, but that's another conversation because gender and sexuality in sports are not well addressed. But anyways, you're looking at an industry that all of a sudden, maybe you will see more diversity. But as we've seen in football, people are quick to hire the Arthur Smiths and the Brandon Staley's of the world way faster than they are to hire the Todd Bowles and the Eric Bieniemies and pretty much any black coordinator in the sport. Like, they're people are quick to hire those people who are not. And to be fair, they did hire two coaches in the seven team coaching cycle. They did hire two coaches who were not of white descent. Robert Saleh, Muslim American from Detroit, which, by the way, I never knew there was a huge Muslim American population in Detroit. I didn't realize that was a thing, but it is. That's pretty cool, to be honest. I would have never thought it. But you have Robert Saleh, and you have the guy who is coaching the Houston Texans now, the old guy, David Culley. Old guy David Culley coaching the Texans for at least a year. But everyone's quick to hire the Sirianni's and the Staley's and the Arthur Smiths more than the Eric Bieniemies. And again, I don't know what makes a good coaching hire, but the demographics do look wrong, especially with the high turnover rate of head coaches in the NFL. The overall point being, when it comes to Kevin Mather, is the fact that Kevin Mather is just a byproduct of the system. The fact that we've seen three of these incidents in the last month of baseball, these are just the ones that you're catching, of course, and people who slip up big time. For example, Kevin Mather, you did this to yourself, buddy. And in the case of Mickey Callaway, that was something that probably should have before then, but it came out as a result of this Jared Porter story, basically set the stage for Mickey Callaway to go down because it was similar people reporting and more people coming forward with accusations within the Mets organization. And this is, again, Mickey Callaway was also hired by the Angels after being fired by the Mets. And so this all just comes full circle to what baseball is going to become, because I'm telling you, baseball is going to look like boxing. Baseball is going to be very similar to what boxing is now. Now, boxing still draws people in, and it's a huge moneymaker, and baseball will continue to be a moneymaker. But boxing is only relevant a few times a year, and for baseball, it has fallen apart fast. It was fast of how quick this is going apart. And to be honest, ESPN might not be in the baseball game sooner or later, and that could be a death blow to baseball and its contracts. Now, I think baseball is still the fourth most popular sport in America behind, of course, college football, basketball, and the NFL. I think the UFC is creeping up, but the UFC's got their own problems. They have as much diversity as baseball, but UFC's got their own problems with their diversity. But it's really interesting to watch it all play out and the decline of baseball, because I think at a certain point, people will just go away from the sports. Their niche. And this is the thing I've talked about. In sports now, you can have niches. It's okay to have niche sports. Everyone's a bit of a football fan, and everyone will gather for the Super Bowl, and everyone can get excited for basketball. But baseball, hockey, UFC, boxing, golf, tennis, everyone's got their little niche. You can pick and choose sports that you like or pick and choose sports that you might enjoy. And these niche sports will come full circle after a certain period of time. And sometimes people will connect with people who are close in those niches. For me, I guess baseball is a niche of mine. Baseball's got me hooked. I'm going to love baseball probably the rest of my life, or at least for a good while. Baseball still brings me a lot of joy. That's not the case for a lot of people. And stories like Kevin Mather explain things on a micro level, because again, sports reflect society. There's a reason that antiquated things ultimately die out, because the world is constantly evolving. And so the world will constantly evolve with baseball, as it did when all of the Latinx players entered the sport, and all of a sudden you have a sport that doesn't have as many black people as it used to, and is becoming increasingly homogenized with white people at the top of front offices, and candidates are increasingly white and homogenized. And so this leads to a situation where people are going to hire who they want. And if baseball is going to become a white boys club instead of a boys club, just like a white people club, so be it. A lot of sports are already run that way, usually by crappy organizations, but a lot of sports are already run that way. And if that's the way it's going to be, so be it. And if stories like Kevin Mather are going to continue to pop up, it's probably for the best that baseball just executes this brain drain. And for the sake of me as a baseball fan and someone who's obviously watching these stories, I would like this process to speed up. I would like the brain drain to commence. I would like to get all of these stories out in the open so that we can move forward with whatever baseball is going to be as it enters the 2020s, as it enters the 2030s, as it enters the 2040s. Is baseball going to be a regional sport? And I'm okay with that. I love baseball. People I talk to don't love baseball, but that's okay. If you don't love baseball, it's not the end of the world. There are regional sports that everyone can get involved with. For example, I will not pay for a UFC fight because of the UFC, the way that Dana White advertises his fights, the way that he doesn't first of all, the divisions that they sow and using Rush Limbaugh-style tactics, the people that they are appealing to, and a lot of the politics of Dana White as well are a little bit gross, and the fact that they are definitely pro-QAnon, we can throw that in there. And the fact that Dana White has not great with paying his fighters. So one of those reasons that I definitely am not a UFC person, definitely not going to get into the UFC. Now you can make the same argument around about baseball, and I understand that, absolutely. Baseball has just had me hooked for a while, which is why I don't judge people who love the UFC. I will follow UFC. I might bootleg a fight. I might, you know, whatever it might be. But it's just a niche sport. It's not something I want to commit deep time and investment into. And, you know, so be it. That's just the way that it's going to be. It's the way it's going to be. But baseball, I just want to have this commence forward further. And it's why the Kevin Mather thing is good, and why, again, like I said, kids, this is why journalism is important. Exactly what happened to Kevin Mather is exactly why journalism is super duper important. Super important. Super important to have journalism that can hold people like Kevin Mather accountable when they say racist and bigoted and hateful things. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping into the Take It Easy radio show. We'll be back again tomorrow with another great episode, as well as an episode over on our podcast being released Thursday morning. Probably won't be a guest tomorrow, so it'll be a similar format to this radio show. So if you like these radio shows, definitely check out the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts. Of course, again, follow on Instagram. You can check out our blog as well if you're interested in that. There's all kinds of places you can find Take It Easy and all of the stuff that we're doing. If you're looking for Open Talk Radio, of course, stay tuned for later episodes, as well as following on Instagram. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, have a great day. And as always, take it easy. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.